The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Well, good afternoon and welcome back. So good to be here with you today. Thank you for joining me and allowing me to hang out with you on this beautiful day. I hope it's going well for you. Look forward to diving into a lot of what's happening in your world. Of course, we'll pray the chaplet coming up in about an hour. I'll give you an early heads up for that. Yeah, I was thinking about how powerful that prayer is and how many answers we're getting to it. And I just want to give you the opportunity to invite somebody else to join you today. You got about an hour, maybe say, hey, I know we have that legal case coming up. Or, man, our business is in real trouble. Why don't we pray today for God's mercy? You know, maybe it's the health situation or the trouble with your kid. You know, we all have different issues, right? Let's pray together. 1 hour from now, they can stream the show anywhere they are in the country, in the world, really, and the station that you're listening to on. Such a great way to get plugged in. It's good to be here with you. We got a lot to get into today. And as always, when you tune into the broadcast, you know you're going to get a mixed bag. You don't know what you're going to get. And sometimes we don't either. When we start our show early in the morning to get ready to kind of hang out with you and take a look at what the biggest and most important issues of the day are. There's some major legislation happening on the East Coast I want to tell you about. It's going to affect the rest of the country. We'll get into that. And I want to take a look at finances, too. You've probably seen that economic growth has slowed to an annual rate about 1.1%. We'll talk where the economy is going a little bit later. Maggie's a week away from her last day before she gets married. We'll talk to her, and I want to hear from you, too. But I want to fill you in on some news. We'll talk news. There's a Senate vote yesterday about something that 21 different court rulings have declared dead in the water. Back in 1970s, I should say. If you're familiar with the ERA, the Equal Rights Amendment, that was introduced and never got enough states to ratify it to pass. In fact, as time went on, some of the states did ratify it. They said, well, we're going to rescind that vote. But its proponents believe that the best way to make abortion legal all throughout the land in the country, so they were desperate to see it resurrected. And part of the amendment was a deadline to get it ratified, which was never made. So proponents have brought numerous court cases to have the deadline declared null, but every single judge, no matter who appointed them, had thrown the case out. And this happened time and time and time again. So yesterday, the vote was to try to get the Senate to revive it. And guess how close this vote was? 51 to 47. It fell far short of the supermajority it needed to pass. So legislation to expand religious freedom protections to include government contracts and receiving government funding passed both chambers of the Oklahoma legislature, and now they head to the governor's desk. Catholic news agency, they were reporting that Oklahoma, the law that currently prohibits government entities from imposing a substantial burden on a person's free exercise of religion, even if the burden results from a rule of general applicability. The Religious Freedom Act, which now it's, of course, Republican Governor Kevin Stitt's signature, would expand the definition of a substantial burden to include contracts with the government or receiving state funds. And the bill was passed with a substantial majority, in the support of most Republicans and really opposition from most Democrats. Biden administration's intent on promoting what I really believe is a leftist agenda, and that's the only thing that you can think of after they decided to sue the state of Tennessee after the state legislature passed a bill forbidding minors from being able to go through gender transitions. I sit back here and I think, how do we get to this point? Right? How do we get to this point that we're talking about this kind of news? I mean, it's just absolutely, it's crazy. I was talking also, and we'll talk to Peter Grandage about what's happening here, where citizens are going to be penalized for having good interest, good credit ratings. It's like what was white is now black. What is black is now white. It's like we're in bizarro world, right? It's like we're in some alternate universe. It's like opposite day is really what it is. I'm really a boy, but you're going to call me a girl. I've got good credit. That means I'm going to pay more. I mean, just think about how insane this stuff is, right? Does it make any sense to you? I'm trying to simplify it, but it really is true. It's crazy. It's just it's crazy, 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 crazy stuff, and it's very, very frustrating. Look, if you want to join the conversation here today, if you want to sound off, feel free to. The number here, 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. And you can get in any time here with me, and just love to get your take on a lot of the stuff as well. One other thing that we should maybe talk a little bit about as well, and it'll be coming up, a couple important spiritual things I want to get into with you today. And one is St. Louis de Montfort, and the other will be, of course, St. Thérèse of Lisieux. Because I think the Montfort, maybe I'll share some of this now. I was going to do some news, but let me just give you some insight into St. Louis de Montfort first. Because as we talk about what's going on in the culture, it's almost like St. Louis de Montfort knew this stuff, right? He saw this stuff. He knew what was unfolding. And St. Louis de Montfort, and I think maybe the Lord wants me to talk to you about this today. His feast day is actually today. It's April 28th. The Universal Church celebrates this day. If you're not familiar with him, he was a 17th century saint who was very revered for his intense devotion to the Blessed Mother. And if you've ever done a Marian consecration, which I have done, then you're going to realize the roots of a lot of that come from St. Louis de Montfort. He's perhaps most famously known for the entrustment of Our Lady. He came up with that saying, totus tuum, ego sum, which means I'm all yours. And John Paul II, of course, he took the phrase totus tuus as his episcopal motto. So you see the parallel. And John Paul II read Louis de Montfort's writings. And John Paul II also did a Marian consecration as well. He lost his mother at a very young age, and Our Lady became his mother. And you could see it in his pontificate. His papal sign was just a cross with an M beneath it. But Montfort, like John Paul II, like Maximilian Kolbe, like Mother Teresa, like all these great saints, had this connection, this devotion to Our Lady. And John Paul lived through terrible times, as you know. But Louis de Montfort saw things that were to come, and he recorded them in this book. De Montfort, I think it was 30, I think he became a priest at 27, and he discovered it was just a great gift of preaching when he was about 32. And he committed, I'm sorry, Meg, just say it in my headset. Yeah, I'm going to share what Maggie was asking me. Are you going to go to the segment now? I want to get back to news, but I one of the things I wanted to do first, I was going to deal with this a little bit later. I just think in light of all that we're talking about, dealing with de Montfort now, I think, is critical. And then we'll get into Dylan as well. That'll come up. Because what he sees here is really the solution to the problems that we're going to be facing here. De Montfort faced heresies of his own day, right? Like we have today. I think we have a lot of false gods, a lot of false ideologies, a lot of false religions today. He met with opposition, especially from the Jansenists. That was a heretical movement within the church at the time. They believed in absolute predestination, and which only a few chosen are saved, and of course everybody else is damned. And a lot of France was influenced by Jansenism at the time, but including bishops, believe it or not. And they actually banished St. Louis de Montfort from preaching in their diocese. Don't you love this too? I'm kind of fired up today. I had a lot of coffee, so I'm going to be all over the place. I'll tell you, I see the parallel to Padre Pio, right? Another great saint who was not allowed to say Mass publicly for a decade, right? St. Faustina's devotion to Divine Mercy, banned for years, right? The works of God are often opposed. They're often attacked. They're often buried. And it sometimes looks like evil wins. But in the end, it never does, right? In fact, de Montfort was even poisoned by the Jansenists. He survived, and as a result of it, he suffered ill health for the rest of his life. But when he was recuperating from the effects of the poisoning, he wrote that masterpiece. And often in our suffering, right, when something goes wrong, God often brings good out of it. I say that all the time. After being poisoned, after being sick, after losing his health, he wrote True Devotion to the Blessed Mother. And he correctly prophesies. He prophesied that this work that he wrote would be hidden by the devil for a period of time. And you know, his seminal work was discovered 200 years after his death. You think Satan thought he won that one, right? 200 years after his death. But all things come to light in the right time. I think the devotion to Divine Mercy is meant for this time. The Lord said the world will have no peace unless it turns with trust in my mercy. I think the Montfort and Our Lady, she's coming in unprecedented numbers. I think today this work is critical, this consecration, this devotion to Our Lady. A year before he died, St. Louis de Montfort founded two congregations, the Daughters of Divine Wisdom, which tended the sick in the hospitals, educate poor girls, and the Company of Mary, missionaries devoted to preaching and spreading devotion. But let me just tell you about this manuscript. Louis de Montfort not only prophesied that the book would be exposed to vicious attacks and that it would be hidden by the evil one who would try to suppress it by any means. That's because Satan knows how powerful Marian consecration is. This is St. Louis de Montfort's feast day. Let's turn to him. Let's ask Our Lady. Let's entrust Our Lady. Let's give her our lives, our children. Let's give her our country. Let's ask her to protect this nation. She is the patron of America, right? She is our mother. She appeared in the geocenter of the Americas. We have entrusted as America, as the United States of America, we consecrate ourselves to her Immaculate Heart, the Immaculate Conception. She is our patroness under. Here's what Louis de Montfort said. Listen to these prophetic words. He says, I clearly foresee that raging beasts will come in fury to tear to pieces with their diabolic teeth this little book and the one that the Holy Spirit made use of to write of it. And they will cause it to lie hidden in darkness and silence, the silence of a chest, so to prevent it from seeing the light of day. They will even attack and persecute those who read it and put into practice what contains, but no matter what, so much the better. It even gives me encouragement to hope for great success at the prospect of the mighty legion of brave and valiant soldiers of Jesus and Mary, both men and women, who will fight the devil, the world, and corrupt nature in perilous times that are sure to come. De Montfort wrote that in 1716. He died in 1716. He wrote it in that era. And if you know the time period, that was during the French Revolution. In the 1790s, civil authorities, they went about literally searching for records and documents held by missionaries of the Company of Mary in the Mother's House. That was his organization. And to avoid the true devotion being found and the destruction of some of these important texts, the missionaries entrusted a lot of these to local farmers who hid them, who protected them, who concealed them. And the manuscripts were buried in an old wooden trunk and chests underground in nearby farms, exactly what Louis de Montfort prophesied would happen. It would be lost for a long time in the darkness of a chest, right? Isn't that what he said? And St. Louis de Montfort's treasure trove, if you will, this treatise of true devotion to the Virgin Mary, it lay hidden and forgotten. How many people have lived and died in 200 years? Our country is just a couple hundred years old, right? Was this lost to time? Did Satan win? Only after the revolution had passed that any books, any manuscripts were discovered and returned to the libraries. And when this book was discovered, it would ultimately change the world. Louis de Montfort saw future events yet to unfold. And maybe a little bit later, I will share more of that with you. I just find it really interesting because he sees a time in which evil rages. And one of the solutions, one of the ways to crush the head of the evil one is our Blessed Mother. And we'll talk more of true devotion to Mary. But I just wanted to interject that here because it really is a solution. I want to talk to you about a little bit more news as well. I want to talk to you about, Dylan Mulvaney. Because here's what we're in today. This country's not going to be defeated by bullets, you know, by weapons. I think it's going to be brought to its knees by the acceptance of disoriented, deviant ideologies and from corruption within. James Hurston's going to be stopping by when I get him on the air and talk to him. But let me just, before I talk to James, just give you a little background on what's happening here, right? The whole Biden administration, where we are, there's an affront on God. A front on life, a front on gender, an attack on marriage. I mean, you take a look at all those things. We are living in, I believe, in a time of great diabolic disorientation, a time of great evil. And this current administration, I don't know what the next administration is going to do or what their positions will be, but this one right now is intent on promoting a leftist ideology, right? A leftist agenda. And that's the only thing that you can think of after they sued the state of Tennessee, as I was talking about. A bill that would forbid minors from being able to go through gender transitions. Right? Hello? Reuters reported that the Justice Department on Wednesday filed a complaint challenging the new law that bans doctors from providing treatment such as puberty blockers, and hormone therapy and surgery to transgender minors. Minors is the key word here, right? The Justice Department said that the law violated the U.S.'s Constitution's 14th Amendment, which promises equal protection. The Justice Department also said that it was asking the court to issue an immediate order to prevent the law from going into effect on July 1. And here's what they said. They said no person should be denied access to necessary medical care just because of their transgender status. Assistant Attorney General Kristen Clark of the Justice Department said that in a statement. So the Biden administration is trying to force this into the state. Meanwhile, there's another guy who actually thinks he's there's another man who thinks he's a girl or a woman, if you will. He wants to go even further. Maggie was sharing with me before we came into the studio that Dylan Mulvaney, the social media influencer who came to prominence over this whole Bud Light fiasco, you know, they put him on beer cans and lost $6 billion because he insulted their, I guess, their fratty beer consumers, right? It's so silly. He believes that it should be illegal for people like me to speak the truth and to say, no, he is really a man. No, this type of behavior is wrong. He said on Instagram that, you know, some of what he's hearing is so far, and this is a quote from him, his quote is so far from my truth that I was hearing my name that I didn't know who they were talking about sometimes. That's what he says. I didn't know who they were talking about sometimes. He says, he went on to say, what I'm struggling to understand is the need to dehumanize and to be cruel. Dehumanization has never fixed anything in history. And he's right. Anyone who does try to dehumanize him is wrong. Absolutely. There should be no unjust discrimination, period. But he's also objectively wrong. He's a man, not a woman. Right? I don't care how much Maybelline he puts on. Right? He's a man. And I don't mean to be cruel or crass. I'm just getting tired of this insanity that we are living in. Right? He wants, and Maggie, open your mic if you could, if you don't mind, quickly. He wants those who speak out against this, right? Who offend this to, what was the story you just saw? To be punished? I mean, what was the...
He wants it to be made illegal. Like, you could be punished for misgendering someone.
That's the term I'm looking
at. Yeah, misgendering. There's a Parks and Rec episode where they have visitors from Venezuela. Yeah. And I wish I had the audio, but the guy's like, You throw a wrapper on the ground, you go straight to jail. Like, all of these things, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, so arrest them for being misgendered, right? I mean, why? Because you want me to accept your reality, right? You want me to accept you're a woman when you're really a man. Yeah, it's a great example. I think I heard my colleague Patrick the other day. He says a lot of people say, okay, here's an apple, but I want you to say that this is a banana. Well, no, it's really an apple. No, it's a banana. I want you to call it a banana because it's now a banana. Well, no, it's really an apple, right? No. It's an apple. You know, no. It's a banana. It's not reality. This is not reality. And you want me to accept your reality, but you don't want to accept mine, right? You don't accept the truth. You want me to accept a distorted form of reality. And that's where we are. And you know what? Institutions, businesses, governments, we're all going down this path. I'm joined right now with James Herson. I am grateful for his time. He's a New York Times bestselling author. He's been with us many times. Check out the Left Coast Report. He writes that column for Newsmax.com. Also a professor of law and a musician. You can check him out at the Jim Jams. That's his handle for Twitter, at the Jim Jams. His website, JamesHerson.com. James, I wanted to get you in on the conversation here. I just saw the story today before walking in the studio, and I'm grateful for you coming on short notice. Your thoughts on Dylan Mulvaney's feelings, how they might be hurt by calling him something that he's not. And, you know, I always want to be charitable, but I also want to be truthful. And sometimes fraternal correction and truth is not always painless. But your thoughts?
Well, you have the right to remain silent, Drew, because you called that banana and apple.
Yeah.
And that was a great metaphor for what's going on. It sounds like, well, first of all, we have to say Dylan Mulvaney is not a policymaker, hasn't been elected to anything, yep. Is just a 26-year-old actor who, you know, became a TikTok star, was invited to the White House, and all of a sudden corporations have decided they want to self-destruct by having this person be their spokesperson. Like Bud Light, you mentioned, I think it's a 50% sales reduction in Bud Light.
Wow.
But now, you know, a policymaker. So essentially what Mulvaney is suggesting is to legislate people into lying, is to mandate fiction. And this is right out of, again, you know, it seems like Orwell's writing just keeps coming back to us. But it's thought police, it's speech police. And one of the key things that Mulvaney took a shot at were journalists who didn't use the pronoun she and used the pronoun he. And I'm certain that many of them were religious publications, conservative outlets, people that believe in science, people that believe in chromosomes. And, you know, it just so happens that no matter what, you know, they can have feminization surgery, as Dylan Mulvaney has had, and take hormones and wear makup and all this other stuff, but it doesn't change the chromosomes.
Yeah,
and for those of us who are educated in biology, who are qualified to say what is a woman, you know, this is just, it's just a matter of being able to speak the truth.
Yeah.
But it is coupled with two other things from a legal point of view: freedom of speech, First Amendment, and freedom of religion, First Amendment. Because, you know, obviously the First Amendment freedom of speech, which relates to freedom of the press and journalism, is the ability to be able to speak the truth, which of course is under threat in our from the current neoliberalism, which believes in using misinformation as a cover for censorship. And so, you know, the First Amendment is under assault. This is part of that assault. But also freedom of religion, because for many faith traditions, including Judeo-Christian and Catholic, the idea that gender is a created construct, not one that a person identifies as on a whim on any given day, which is the gender fluidity agenda that we are being assaulted with. And the other thing, of course, is that we're seeing the weaponization of this gender agenda being aimed at children, and trying to reduce the autonomy of parents. And all of this has to be brought up in the context of this, which is really a demand, a demand from Dylan Mulvaney that journalists refer to the correct pronoun that Dylan Mulvaney identifies with on that given day. So it's the idea of legislating that is anti-American, anti-Western tradition, anti-freedom, and anti-religion.
Now, you know, I was reading the article about the story too. It's interesting where the media is in this, and it says transgender influencer Dylan Mulvaney once said it should be illegal for people to refer to her by an incorrect pronoun, and the journalists are referring to her as her, right? The media plays along with this as well, and it really is a battle to. Really, and I look at Bruce Jenner, who everybody calls Caitlyn now. That's how he goes. Where are you on that issue? How do you balance that when Bruce Jenner wants to be called Caitlyn, or Dylan Mulvaney wants to, you know, be called a her when he's really here? How do you deal with that?
Well, I mean, it's within the same context. I mean, I think it's interesting that Dylan Mulvaney still continues to refer to himself as Dylan. Which I guess Dylan could, in the modern vernacular, could go either way. But that was this person's given name, born name, it appears. And it's just, to me, the idea that, you know, if this becomes convention, which it pretty much already has. And the Associated Press, when they publish their guidelines that many of the press outlets dutifully follow, they may have in it just what we're seeing in many press outlets today, where they dutifully refer to people who identify as a given gender with whatever the demand may be. But on the other hand, religious publications, political publications that disagree with that notion have to be free to use the actual scientific pronouns and not be threatened with, what are we talking about? Passing a law that either makes a publication liable so that people could sue them for damages, mm-hmm. or that make it criminal so that people who use the wrong pronouns were arrested. In either case, the way I look at it, it violates our legal tradition, wow. our fundamental principles, and it just it adds power to an agenda that is, in fact, a destructive agenda. I mean, what is the outcome here? Is it that we have more people advocate for children to have life-changing drugs forced on them and their parents aren't notified?
Right. Horrible. No, I couldn't agree with you more. James, I got to hold it there. I'm sorry to do that to him. I'm so grateful for your time. I got to take a short break. JamesHurston.com. Follow James there and add the Jam Jams. This hour is sponsored by Creative Planning. How is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? More info, including disclosures at creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, thanks for joining me. It is great to be here with you today. I really do appreciate you taking time to join me. We got a lot to get into. Chaplet is about 28 minutes away. My thanks to, of course, James Hurston for his great contribution. I just say, look, we got to pray. Today, it's what it's all about. After the chaplet, we've got a special guest stopping by. Once again, calling for this need to prayer. And I think this is all we can do. I think about my platform, what God has given to me here. And the one thing I can do is really call you to something I believe in, and that's prayer. That's the most important thing we can do to help bring about change of hearts, how we can bring about conversion of this country, how we can invite God for special protection. And that's really what we need. I was thinking about tomorrow, too. Father Nicholas Federspiel had reached out to us. We were trying to track him down because he, about a week ago, said, hey, I think it's this Saturday, is the anniversary of St. Therese's, I think it's 100 years. And I didn't realize that. And I thought, oh, wow, that's pretty cool. The Little Flower, I want to talk about her for a moment as well. And if you have reached out to her, if you have called upon her intercession, if you have in any way seen the fruit of her intercession, I know a lot of people get roses. I'd love to hear your story. The number to get in is 888-914-9149. We can give her a little credit. Therese Martin, and I am not going to try French because I am terrible. I get corrected all the time when I say Therese or try to say Le Chou. I never get it right. My apologies to any French-speaking individuals out there. But when Therese was born, she was the last of nine children. And she was born to Louis and Zélie Martin back in 1873. I think January 2nd was her birthday. This is, of course, France. And only five of those children lived to reach adulthood. And she was precocious. She was, they say, very sensitive. She needed a lot of attention. I was a very bad boy when I was a little kid, too, boy. I was precocious, for sure. You know, my poor mother, she's probably a saint today. I mean, if you would have seen me as a little boy, I was a handful. But I'd love to hear that about other saints. You know, you just don't come out of the womb virtuous, right? The greatest saints often start as sinners, they say. So, like John Paul II, who lost his mother very early, her mother died when she was just 4 years old. And as a result, her father and her sisters, they babied young Therese. And she had a spirit that wanted everything. Right? I love that. Who doesn't? I'm the same way. I ask God for everything. And I say to my wife sometimes, I'm like, man, I'm spoiled. Because the Lord gives me so much. Sometimes I give him a checklist. And look, God's not a genie, right? He's not some machine you put your coin in and you get something out. But God loves us so much. Sometimes he surprises you. And I've got a story I can't really share in detail with you. I don't know if my wife would want me to share that, but I was taking a walk one night. I was taking the walk with my dog, and I was just praying. I had lived in another state, and I had spoken to the Lord about a change that I was going to make, something that I really felt he was calling me to. And I gave him a checklist. I said, well, here's really what I want, Lord. And I went through boom, 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 boom. I didn't limit God. I held out that big cup that I often talk about. I didn't say, well, if you could, if it's possible, maybe you could do this for me. I just said, Lord, look, here's the deal. I you know, whatever you want, I'm down with. But, man, I'd love this. And I made that request to him, right? And I forgot about that prayer, to be honest with you. I came back home. Days go on. The events unfolded. I find myself now in this new location and position. And suddenly one day I'm evaluating. I'm trying to be vague here about the request. And I look around and I'm saying, oh, my gosh, the Lord gave me everything that I had asked for. I mean, it was insane. I said, I can't believe it. That prayer came back to me almost in a special way. And it came back so vividly, and I couldn't believe the checklist. There probably wasn't a thing that was missed on it. And sometimes when we don't get exactly what we think, now in retrospect, I can look back and I say, oh my gosh, it was even more perfect than what I asked for. God always has something better for us. So I love Therese. I kind of relate to her a little bit because I feel the same way. I feel like I'm a baby. You know, I ask the Lord for all these things and he's so good. He spoils me. When she was 14, on Christmas Eve, this is back in 1886, she had a conversion that actually transformed her life. And from then on, her powerful energy, the sensitive spirit that she had, it was just turned to love. I mean, it was her focus. It consumed her. It was love. So instead of keeping herself happy at 15, now again, she's 14, remember this, she has this conversion where God, I think, gave her special grace. At 15, she enters the Carmelite convent and gives her whole life to God. Now, we talk about life-altering decisions. I mean, 15 years of age to make a decision like that. And she took the religious name Sister Therese of the Child Jesus and the Holy Face. And she lived a very hidden, very simple life. She was gifted with just great intimacy with God. And through her sickness and really dark nights, she had, many of the great saints have had this too, these dark nights of the souls, dark doubt and fear. You know, she never gave up on God. And you might be going through a dark night yourself, maybe not in terms of the spiritual sense of this sometimes, where saints achieve a new level of sanctity and union with God. We all these dark nights, right, where our faith is really tested, where you are really tested. You don't know how the finances are going to work out. The home is in trouble. You don't know how you're ever going to be able to forgive your spouse. You don't see your child ever being freed from those drugs. You know, the doctor's giving you the death sentences. We can be in a real dark night. It's really hard to have faith. It's really hard to trust and to believe in God. But she always remained faithful to God. I think we have to take our lessons from these great saints. We have to look at the obedience of Padre Pio, who was banned from saying Mass for 10 whole years, even though he was innocent. We have to look at Saint John of the Cross and his dark night of the soul, or Saint Therese, or even Mother Teresa, who had 40 years without ever feeling that union with God. Therese remained faithful to God. I encourage you to do the same thing. Why? Because she was rooted in his merciful love. And after a very long struggle with tuberculosis, she died. She died in 1897. She died at the age of 24. And her last words were really the story of her life. I think the last words say a lot about us. I know what my last words are going to be. At least I hope they'll be. Her last words were, "My God, I love you." And that's a perfect way to end it, isn't it? That's what life is about. Loving God, desiring to be with him through all eternity. I hope those are my last words. I hope I also utter, Jesus, I trust in you. You know, I hope he meets me and takes me home. Well, here's a girl who wanted to travel the world and be a missionary. and yet was cloistered, right? And yet the world came to know her. She wrote this very beautiful autobiography called The Story of a Soul. And if you're not familiar with her, I do encourage you to pick it up and read it. She described her life as a little way of spiritual childhood. And she lived every day with just this unshakable trust, faith, confidence in God's love. So what matters in life, she says, and I love this, it's not great deeds, she says, but great love. Didn't we see that with Mother Teresa? She said, oh, Mother, how are you going to help all these? You'll never help all these people. She goes, I'm not called to be successful. I'm called to be faithful. It's not great deeds, but great love. That is what's going to define us in the end when we stand before God, when we're evaluated, when our life is weighed in the balance. Therese lived, and she taught a spirituality of attending to everyone and everything well and doing it with love. It's the most important thing. I mean, what are we but an empty a gong clanging in the wind, right? If we don't have love, what good is our works? What good are our words? What good is what we do? Without love, they're empty, right? She was love. She understood love. This is the bridge that connects us to God. She believed that just as a child becomes enamored with what it is before her, that we should also have that same childlike focus. Be totally attentive to love. And it's a very simple spirituality. And she had the spirituality of just doing ordinary things with extraordinary love. Ordinary, whatever it is, whatever your job is, she'd pick up a piece of paper off the floor and offer it to God. That could be an act of love. Holding the door for someone, letting somebody in traffic, forgiving somebody, right? Treating somebody with dignity and kindness. Do it with love. If you're a mom, be the best mom you can be and do it with love. If you are in sales, be the best you can be, but do everything you can with love. Teresa saw the seasons as reflecting the seasons of God's love affair with us. And she loved flowers. She saw herself as the little flower of Jesus who gave glory to God by just being beautiful, right? By being her little self amongst the other flowers in the garden. It's kind of a cool concept, right? And because of this beautiful analogy, the title Little Flower remained with her. I remember as a little boy, I found a holy card of her. And I remember praying this. I'd ride my bike and I'd pray her and would ask God for things. I know you might have had the same thing. I want to hear your stories. I'm going to go to the phones. I'm going to grab a couple of your calls. Do you have a relationship with St. Therese? How did you come to know her? And what have you seen? What are the fruits of her intercession in her life? It's been 100 years. Tomorrow we celebrate 100 years with this saint who inspired popes and other saints. Her inspiration and her powerful presence from heaven, it touches people. It has a profound impact on them. She was canonized by Pope Pius XI, this is 1925. He was the pope that was around during the Fatima apparitions. Had she lived, I think she would have seen, she'd only been 52 years old when she was declared a saint. So it didn't take long for her canonization. But she has a great, great mission. And her mission was just to make God loved. And she says her mission, like St. Faustina, she says, it will begin after my death. A lot of parallels between the two. In fact, I could share a little bit more about Faustina's devotion too, to her. But let me grab a few calls. 888-914-9149. Feel free to dial in. Love to hear your story. Lou Ann in Lebanon, Pennsylvania. So good to hear from you.
Hi, Drew.
Hey, Lou Ann.
So I have a story about doing the novena to St. Therese. My son was, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years old. And we were doing the novena together, and I was trying to teach him about novenas. And towards the end of the novena, we were going to Mass, and it was a Saturday evening Mass. There had been a wedding earlier in the day, and as we really got out of the car and started walking into the church, we looked down on the ground, and there were 2 baby roses on one stem. And I said to my son, there's our rose. That's from St. Therese. And it was just a beautiful confirmation of the, sending the roses from heaven when you do the novena.
I love it.
It was great.
I love it. I know sometimes people are very specific about what they ask too. Like I want white roses, or I want yellow roses, or I want red roses. And quite often they come through. I believe in the intercession of the saints. Louie, thank you. It's good to hear from Lebanon, Pennsylvania, too. Maggie, have you had a run into?
Well, I was unwittingly a participant in one day. I had a bouquet of flowers on my desk. I don't know. This was maybe 6 months ago.
Yeah.
And Val, our wonderful HR gal, she was here. She's not always in Lincolnshire, but she was that day. She happened to walk past my desk and stop at my cube. And I just instinctively reached for the bouquet and I pulled out a rose for her. And I said, here, have a flower. And she, like, her mouth dropped open and she goes, are you kidding me? And I said, no, take it. And she's like, this is day 9 of my St. Therese novena. And she goes, this is my rose. And I was like, wow, there you go.
It's so cool how God works, isn't it? I mean, we are used sometimes very unwittingly. We're instruments of that Holy Spirit. I love it. All right, I'm going to take a short pause. When we come back, let's take a few calls. I'd love to hear from you. God's at work in our life, right? And we see it all the time. I mean, these saints inspire me. St. Therese, St. Faustina, so many of the greats. And I believe they are interceding. I love what she had to say. Her mission will begin after her death. That's what Faustina said too, right? Tremendous parallels. Share with me your story. You can get in now, 888-914-9149. How's God giving you those signs? Answered your prayers. Let you know that he loves you. I'll be back. Hey, looking for a new job? How about one that offers opportunities for spiritual, social, and charitable growth? Our sponsor, Catholic Order of Foresters, is hiring new agents today. Visit relevantradio.com/forester. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
Pray, hope, and don't worry. This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. The Chaplet of Divine Mercy, coming up next.
Yeah, we'll pray the chaplet coming up. Not too late to start a novena. Tomorrow, the 29th of April, will mark the 100-year, the centennial anniversary of the beatification of one of the great saints, St. Therese of Lisieux. And she's known as a little flower. I know she has interceded in a powerful way. And, you know, some people like starting a novena leading up to the feast day. Maybe you start tomorrow and you say, St. Therese, intercede for me. I need your help. Right. Her mission was to make God's love known. And she did it in a very humble way. And she promised, like St. Faustina, that her mission would begin after her death. Faustina said, I'll pull aside the veils of heaven so that you doubting souls will no longer wound the most merciful heart of Jesus with your distrust. Right? St. Therese, the same thing. She said, I'll spend my heaven doing good on earth. I will let fall a shower of roses. Have you had a shower of roses? Have you had an experience? As roses have been described, an experience of St. Therese's kind of signature, right? A lot of people have been touched by her intercession, by her little way. And she's been called the greatest saint of modern times. In fact, I think it was John Paul II. He declared her a doctor of the church. And there's a movement right now for Faustina to be declared a movement of a doctor of the church. So powerful, powerful life, powerful theology. And it's great to have her here with us. Let's take a few more of your calls. I'd love to hear your stories. And you can get in 888-914-9149. Amy in Highland, Indiana. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Drew. I just wanted to share my story. On my last day of my novena to St. Therese, I went into work and a coworker said, oh, I saw this and it made me think of you. She gave me a rose pin. So I took that as confirmation from St. Therese.
Well, I love it. That's beautiful. You were praying to her for 9 days, right? You did 9-day novena?
Yes.
Was it that? Which one was it? That simple one where you asked for the sign? Where you asked for the shower of roses?
Yes, yes.
That's so
and
great.
I didn't get a shower of roses, but I got a rose pin.
Well, you know what? That'll last a lot longer, won't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Amy, thanks. I love it. And, you know, and that's an interesting thing. I mean, sometimes people ask specifically, I want yellow roses, red roses. I would love a rose pin. I think that's a great gift. And keep it on your person or something you have. Constant reminder of the power of the intercession of the saints. Joan in Fort Pierce, Florida. Thank you for calling. Good afternoon.
Hello, is this Drew?
Yes, it is, Joan. Hi, how are you?
Hi, I'm well. I'm well. A couple of things about St. Therese.
Yeah.
My niece just gave birth a week ago to Therese Marie, named after St. Therese. And, oh gosh, I think it is 150 years since her birth.
Yeah, wow.
If she was 1873, I think it's 2023 is 150 years.
Yeah, wow.
Oh, I'm adding that, the 100-year centennial, but also I'm pretty sure it's 150 years.
That's great.
From her birth. And I have not myself had a rose story, but my friend Pauline, shout out to Pauline here in Florida, was praying a novena, and her daughter sends her from New Jersey a picture of an intact rose that washed up on the shore.
Oh, wow.
And the daughter didn't know that her mother was praying that novena. She just thought that was really cool. And my friend was like, oh my gosh, there was my rose.
So cool. I love it. You never know how it's going to arrive, do you? That's fantastic. And it was intact. Wash up. I love it. Joan, thank
exactly.
you. Have
Amazing.
A great one. Appreciate the call. I love the stories. I do. I love how God works. God's a God of surprises. I mean, he really is. God of signs, too. I mean, we're not to put him to the test, of course, but my personal opinion, I don't have a problem asking God to show me a sign and let me know if I'm on the right path or if this is really what I should be praying for. Or, you know, he'll work it out. Kent in Morton Grove, Illinois. Good afternoon.
Hi, Drew.
Hey.
Yeah, it was back in 2003. I was diagnosed with prostate cancer.
Wow.
And then my mom and my uncle sent me a St. Therese prayer card. And as a coincidence, like the last caller mentioned Pauline,
yeah.
and my mom's name was Pauline.
Oh, wow.
And so what happened is that my wife's a nurse, and the next day she went to the hospital, and she was visited in a room. It wasn't even one of her patients. And the people in the room said, oh, please take these dozen roses. And she said, oh, no, no. And I said, no, please, it'd be perfect for you.
Wow.
And so we thought, wow, that was pretty cool.
That is cool. I love that. Well, I am glad you got your sign. I love the way God works. Thank
and
you.
I'm still alive and talking.
Really? Yeah, no kidding, right?
Yeah.
I love it.
Thanks, Drew.
God bless you. Thanks for joining us. Yeah, and I love these stories because, look, she promised she would do this. And here's the thing. If you have a need, call upon her, right? Call upon her. My mission, she says, will begin after my death. I will spend my heaven doing good on earth. I will let fall a shower of roses. I heard about them washing up on beaches, about pins coming, about bouquets. I just love the way it works. Midlothian, Virginia. Patricia, thank you for joining us. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Yes, I have an amazing story of St. Therese. I've had a devotion to her, and my son was getting ready to go through radiation for an aggressive thyroid cancer. And he knew of my devotion to her, and I told him many times I was praying to her for him. And in the morning, he walked out of his house for the first radiation treatment. It was in November in Maryland, and he had a rose bush in his yard, and there was one beautiful rose on the bush. Only one. And he took a picture of it and he sent it to me.
Yep.
And he said, here's your rose, Mom.
Aww.
And that picture is Aww. Still on my refrigerator today.
Patricia,
and
let me stop you for a second. I just want to make sure I am hearing you correctly. Did you say that rose grew in November?
In Maryland.
Wow.
Yes.
I believe I grew up on the East Coast. I know how cold Maryland could be in November. That's amazing.
Yes.
That's amazing.
And he, thank God, is 10-year cancer-free.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, God is good. Maggie just said in my headset, she's got goosebumps. Patricia, I love it. Thank you for sharing. What a great story. I'll sneak another one or two in if I can. Janet in Chicago, thanks for joining us as well.
Hi, Drew.
Hey,
I was
Jen.
Just checking my yard for a rose because I'm getting chills.
Oh, I
have a great story to share. My mom had a special devotion to St. Therese. My mom's name was Laverne. Laverne had tuberculosis for 6 years. She was so sick when she was a teenager. And, you know, many people died from TB. So she prayed and had a lifelong devotion to St. Therese. And she promised God that if she would get well, that she would care for sick people for the rest of her life. And she did. Mom lived to be almost 92 years old.
Wow.
And I can readily think of six people in our family, extended family, that she cared for. And I mean, people who ultimately died, and she cared for them until their deaths.
Oh, what a beautiful, so, beautiful tribute.
Today is Mom's birthday. Or it would have been. So this is so appropriate that I get to share her story and try to increase devotion.
Well, what a beautiful daughter you are.
She received roses. Thank you. She received roses many times.
Wow.
And prayed to St. Therese throughout her life. She was born 2 years and 1 day after St. Therese's beatification.
Oh, wow, that's great. So, you know, my mother had the same devotion to St. Therese, loved her, would get roses as well. I mean, I grew up with this particular devotion. I love it. Hey, thank you, Janet. Appreciate your heartfelt testimony there. My apologies, everybody's on hold. I got to take a break. I have less than a minute. And when we come back, we'll pray. We'll pray the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. Let's call upon St. Therese, who, of course, will celebrate the 100th anniversary of her beatification. And as our last caller pointed out, I guess 150 years. Her feast day is in October. Surprisingly, I think it's, is it October 1st, I think. Faustina died on October 5th. And the two of these saints have a connection. If I can, when I return, maybe I'll just share a little bit about the connection between the two. And of course, we'll call upon these sister saints, right? These powerhouses who trusted God and above all, loved Him.